U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Americans were already worried about the U.S. economy and inflation, and now they have more reason to be worried. Growth in the first quarter of the year was worse than expected and fell 1.4%, even as inflation came in at 8% over the last year. Is the U.S. economy going into a recession? Or could this be a sign of that dreaded thing, stagflation? And what impact will this GDP report have on the Democratic agenda, particularly the desire to increase taxes? Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot with the Wall Street Journal editorial page, and I'm here with two of my colleagues on the editorial board, Mary O'Grady and Joe Sternberg, both of whom follow the economy closely. Welcome to you both. Mary, I want to get your take here on the that first quarter report. 1.4% is a lot lower negative growth than people thought. The consensus had been about a 1% increase. So what does this tell you when you look not just at the top line number, but some of the internals about where the economy is now and whether or not we should be worried about two quarters of negative growth in a row, which, of course, is the official designation for a recession?
Well, thanks, Paul. I think that with this number, the concerns about a recession are a little bit overstated. If, you know, the headline number down 1.4% looks bad. But if you look under there at the actual components, what really dragged the economy into the negative territory was a lot of consumer buying of imports. So you had very good consumer spending and you had business spending, what we call capital expenditures. And those came in very strong. The problem with Americans buying imports is not really a sign of a recession. I mean, it means that the American consumer was spending money and also that the dollar was strong enough to buy from overseas. So I think it's a little bit misleading to see this as recessionary, which is not to say that I don't think, you know, we could head in that direction over the next year. But I think the warnings here are a little bit premature.
Yeah, Joe, the on the trade side, which was the biggest negative number, exports just fell off the ledge. And there's an analysis by some people. I mean, people are trying to figure out, okay, what happened? Could it be the COVID slowdown and shutdowns in China? That's could be a culprit. How about the war in Ukraine? You know, a lot of people already think that maybe Germany is in a recession. It's certainly high oil prices have contributed to slower growth abroad. How do you read this? And as Mary pointed out, the U.S. economy is still buying a lot of goods from abroad, and that didn't slow down at all in the first quarter. How do you see it?
I currently find the trade data in this kind of number a little difficult to untangle because we're coming out of a two-year period where supply chains around the world were so snarled by the pandemic. So, I mean, if you look at things like purchases of durable goods and that sort of thing, I mean, you're tending right now, I think, to see a fair bit of fluctuation just because a lot of it depends on whether imports can get into the port. You know, one possible explanation, if we have been seeing a surge of imports in this quarter, you start wondering how much of that was actually just backfilling demand that had been there before, but the stuff wasn't able to get off of the ship. And so I think that that is the kind of thing that you need to be alert to. I agree with Mary that I don't think that this is a reason to panic or to assume that we are tipping into a recession, but I think that you have to be very cautious at the moment with how you interpret a lot of these numbers.
Well, just to confound you all further, the stock market has gone up on the news of slower growth. Now, of course, stocks have been down considerably for the first 4 months of this year, particularly tech stocks, and they're going beyond correction territory and really down, signaling slower growth ahead, I assume. But Mary, master of the paradox, would you please explain this to us?
Well, I think the market is always discounting the future earnings of companies. So right now, earnings are coming in fine and some very strong. I think the sell-off that we've seen, and it's been a pretty deep sell-off, has been on the anticipation that the Fed will, the Federal Reserve will raise interest rates, the cost of capital will become more expensive. And so that will be a headwind for companies and for earnings going forward. But I think there's also a tendency in the market that bad news is good news. You know, you need to get the bad stuff behind you and digest it and then look forward. So I think on some level, from a technical standpoint, people talk about oversold market. It may have been that, you know, the concerns, the worries about, you know, what's coming caused a lot of investors to bail out. And now they're thinking, well, this number doesn't look so bad, and they're tiptoeing back in. Because one problem for investors is that if you get out too soon when it looks like a recession is coming, you can miss some major moves in the market. And that's why, you know, investors are often advised not to try to time the market. Because even if we do have a business cycle in which we get a recession, there will be a recovery as well. And so I think there's somewhat of a remorse for a lot of people who rushed for the exits in the last few months, kind of looking back and saying, well, maybe the recession is coming, but not this year.
Well, yeah, that's good advice, Mary. If you didn't sell at the top, you sure don't want to basically sell at the bottom. you know, if you've taken it to the stocks already, the losses, you might as well wait and ride it out. That's been the lesson, of course, of even the Great Recession, when your 401k looked in awful shape. But then it came back if you stuck it out. We don't give stock market advice here, except, you know, I think it's safe to say buy at the top or sell at the bottom. The number that leapt out at me in this, and I think it might be having a big impact on the psychology of the public and why they're tending to be much less confident about growth in the economy, and that's the disposable real income number. That's the income that people have after inflation. And just looking at the numbers that are in the first quarter GDP report, real disposable income declined by 2%, okay? It was down by 5.6% in quarter four, 4.1% in quarter three, 29.1% in quarter two, all of those from 2021. This means four quarters in a row of declining real disposable income. That's a very bad trend, Joe. And of course, this is the impact of inflation, because it means that even though workers are getting big raises, sometimes, 5% or more, those raises are being dwarfed by inflation. So their real purchasing power is down and they don't feel any wealthier.
Exactly. And this is a big mystery of these numbers, actually, because you do, on the one hand, have this problem with real income, disposable income, failing to keep up with the rate of inflation. And yet a silver lining in the GDP data was that you had reasonably strong business investment. Now, what you would ordinarily expect is that investment from businesses should be improving productivity and driving, you know, wage increases that get out ahead of the rate of inflation. So if that's not happening right now, that is creating that's a sign that something is going wrong in the economy. And it's going to become a big political problem, because, you know, more than any of the exports or imports or any of the business investment or any of the rest of it, inflation adjusted earnings and income and spending power is the thing that voters actually notice when it comes time for an election. So I would not want to be an incumbent asking voters to re-elect me later this year if we keep seeing bad inflation-adjusted spending power numbers like that.
Another figure that jumped out at me is the declining savings rate fell to 6.6% from 7.7%. 6.6% historically not so bad, but way down, Mary, from the peaks of the pandemic, when people, number one, weren't spending because they couldn't go out, and number two, because the government was channeling all kinds of special payments their way. So people still have, you know, something like more than $2 trillion in pent-up savings. Some of that will be spent in the months forward. But I think we're seeing a declining trend in spending. And the question I have is, how robust will the consumer be going forward here, particularly as they look and say, I don't feel as rich as I used to because of inflation?
I think what we know for sure is that, as you mentioned before, wages are not keeping pace with prices. So naturally, people are reaching into their pocketbooks for some of what they saved. And because the Biden administration spent, you know, all of 2021 stuffing more money into, you know, their accounts, that money is there to spend. But eventually, what the problem with this is that it drives a kind of spiral where, you know, prices go higher, then people ask, either they call on their savings in combination with asking for higher wages. And what the Federal Reserve tries to avoid is that wage price spiral. And I'm afraid that we might be in that already. And one of the big problems with that is that in order to stop it, to put an end to that spiral, the Fed has to step in and really tighten the accommodation that is made, the monetary accommodation that it has made. And, you know, our Wall Street Journal story today says that Fed officials say that they want to curb demand for workers without causing layoffs or a recession. And, you know, as been commented many times by many people looking at this problem, that is not an easy landing to stick because it requires the Fed to just have the right amount of tightness, but not too much. And that's really Jay Powell's big challenge going forward, I think.
And I want to eat ice cream every night and not gain weight. This is a difficult line to walk for the Fed. All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the Federal Reserve's response to this report and the political fallout when we come back.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with the Wall Street Journal. This is Potomac Watch podcast with my colleagues, Mary O'Grady and Joe Sternberg. Joe, before the break, Mary talked about the Federal Reserve. And of course, all eyes are on the Fed, which meets next week with the Open Market Committee, expected to raise interest rates by another 50 basis points, half a percentage point, after it lifted them off of zero the last time. And the Fed and Chairman Jay Powell signaling new resolve to rein in inflation. If you look at the inflation number in this GDP report, no solace there. The personal consumption expenditure inflation, 8% on an annual basis, and no signs of decelerating in this report. So I guess the question is there enough negative economic news in this report on the growth side to deter the Fed from going with that big, big is a value judgment here, but 50 basis point increase?
It almost doesn't matter because the Fed can't afford to hold back on fighting inflation now that inflation has reached the level that it's at. I mean, usually the Fed or any central bank would like to be in the position of having this discussion where they say, well, the inflation might be a little elevated right now, but we can take our time dealing with it and account for other issues like what might be going on with broader economic growth or employment. And they would like to be able to do it in a very relaxed way, but that is not possible when inflation is running as high as it is right now. And I think that the Fed seems to realize that they are going to have to focus in a very single-minded way on getting the inflation under control at this point. They've lost the luxury of thinking about anything else. And, you know, there's also this point of what markets expect them to do. I think that a dilemma the Fed would face is that they have spent the past few weeks in particular preparing markets for the fact that there is likely to be a half point increase at the meeting next week, I think it would be very difficult and potentially damaging for the Fed's credibility to end up in the situation where they prepared everyone for this bigger rise, and then all of a sudden it doesn't happen. They get spooked. So I think that they're going to find that they have to keep pushing ahead.
I agree with that, Joe. And so I think the Fed will go ahead with this 50 basis points here next week. And I think the markets expect that. And I think Powell will not want to disappoint them on that. But the question becomes, of course, how resolved will the Fed be if we continue to see slowing growth? Let's talk about the other political response. The president sending out a statement, President Biden, saying slow growth was really slower growth than negative growth, just due to technical factors. That's the two words he used, technical factors. And otherwise, the economy's strong. And saying full speed ahead on his agenda, including more the Build Back Better plan, which he continues to say will lower costs and lower the deficit, reducing prescription drugs and utility bills, restoring fairness to the tax code. So he's still looking for a big tax increase, Mary. Now, even if you're a Keynesian and you believe in demand management as the most important thing in the economy, they would tell you you probably don't want to raise taxes in a slowing economy. What do you think the impact's going to be on the desire to raise taxes here from this GDP report?
Well, Paul, obviously you haven't studied the Joe Biden School of Economics, because he just said today that the way you fight this inflation is to lower the deficit. And, you know, this after all this wild spending that they've been doing, and lowering the deficit, in his mind, is accomplished by raising taxes on all these people that don't pay their fair share. Very troubling outlook from the president. And I think the critical issue for me when I listen to that is that this administration and the economists that support them do not understand what the role of marginal tax rates in economic growth. So every time you raise the marginal rate on businesses and so forth, there's less incentive to produce because they don't keep as much of what they earn. And if he goes down this path, insisting on raising marginal rates on the so-called rich, which is basically anybody who makes money, he, I think, is going to accelerate the trouble that on the other side, Jay Powell has in raising interest rates, because the economy is going to be less vibrant and there's going to be less incentive basically to produce, which is what we need right now.
Right. If you're going to have the Fed maneuvering, as you described in that WSJ article, to reduce demand, what you want to do is offset, and that means slower growth, what you want to do is offset that with being able to channel the investment you have into more productive investments. And that means increasing the supply side of the economy. You're going to say something, Mary.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that, you know, one of the theories that the Fed has had and Biden administration has had for many months now is that we just have this hiccup in prices because we had a problem with global supply chains during the pandemic. But looking out, I mean, you might continue to have a problem with supply from China because of the pandemic crackdown from Beijing. And you have pressure on food prices because of what's going on in Ukraine. And so their idea that they're going to get relief on that side in prices, and so therefore prices will return to something more normal, it seems like they're relying on something that may well not happen. And as you say, at the same time, not doing whatever they can to incentivize producers in this country to make more of what they make.
Joe, let's talk about the preferred solution now being offered by Chuck Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader, and others. White House is part of it, to try to get Joe Manchin to agree finally to some kind of $1.5 trillion or $1 trillion Build Back Better worth of spending and tax increases. And that is the argument that the magic inflation cure is a tax increase. I think we've been there before. What do you think of that? Explain to our listeners why that is unlikely to work.
Well, this all comes directly out of the modern monetary theory playbook, which is becoming so influential among Democrats these days. And the theory is that the Federal Reserve could print as much money as it needed to fund as much government spending as the government wants. And then if you do by accident end up with inflation at the end of the day, you can use tax increases to suck up some of that excess money out of the economy. And the problem is this is just completely detached from the way that a real economy works. The thing that you really need to be doing is stimulating productive investment in the private sector that will create the supply to meet all of the demand that Congress and the Federal Reserve have pumped up over the past couple years. So taking money out of the productive private economy and wasting it on government boondoggles like solar panels and California or what have you is just exactly the wrong way to unlock the supply side forces in the economy that we need to be tapping right now.
My own view is that this GDP report probably has killed a tax increase. I have a hard time seeing them being able to corral enough votes on Capitol Hill to declare themselves for a tax increase, even if it's supposedly on corporations and on supposedly nobody under $400,000 in income. I just think that this is going to be very difficult for them to get through in the teeth of what is at a minimum choppy GDP growth, even if we get a bounce back in the second quarter. It's very hard for me. That figure wouldn't come out until July, and it's very hard for me to see them passing a big tax increase before the election. So grateful to that extent for that small favor. Mary, last word, what's your advice to policymakers and Joe Biden, assuming he might take it?
Well, let's see. Joe Biden, obviously no tax increases now. But I think what I'd like to say is something directed at the Fed, which is that the market has priced in, supposedly, about 9 25 basis point hikes. And as Joe mentioned before, I mean, the credibility of the Fed is extremely important. This is a fiat currency. So the full faith and credit of the Fed is on the line here. And what I would really not like to see is the Fed lose its spine here in tightening monetary accommodation and killing inflation, no matter what these quarterly or month-to-month economic numbers suggest.
All right, Mary, last word. I agree with you on the Fed and the no need for a tax increase, but we're in very, very choppy times economically, and it's going to be fascinating to watch how it plays out. Let's hope we can avoid a recession and get inflation under control. Thanks to Joe. Thanks to Mary. Thank you all for listening. Remember, please send us a note if you would like or a question at pwpodcast@wsj.com. You can subscribe at your favorite platform if you like the show. And the show now is daily, so you can catch us tomorrow on another edition of Potomac Watch. Thanks for listening.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at alibabapowersbusinesses.com.